back, everybody. This is Oscar Talk with yours truly, Chris Tapley of InContention.com and Ann Thompson of Thompson on Hollywood. And this week kind of flew by for me. I don't know if anyone else feels the same. But in any case, it started off Monday with the Academy's nominees luncheon, an annual event where they invite all of the nominees to come and have their picture taken, big class photo, and eat food and answer questions. And Ann was there. So how about you tell us how it went?
I love that event. I really do. What was fun this time was that Sophia Savage went into the interview room, and so she filed the quotes from the each of the, you know, it was live streamed if you caught it, and each of the nominees, the actors, went up and answered some questions and went on and it was interesting because Natalie Portman actually sort of snarked a bit about And you know what? You can look at it on the one hand, you can say, you know what? She's a smart woman. She wants to be taken seriously and not always asked. I mean, imagine how tiring it is to be asked all the time about your high heels and your clothes and your maternity dress. And she just sort of lost it very politely, very courteously. She didn't really lose it. But in the overall scheme of things, it's not something you should do. Criticize the press for asking questions about clothes.
That's what I would do.
You know? I know she's absolutely justified. It's just not a good idea.
Not a good idea if you want to win an Oscar, I guess.
Yeah, and so it's sort of interesting. I mean, there's been a lot of traffic about what happens is during that class photo, you see the applause in the room. Now, who's in that room? I mean, there were 151 nominees across a wide swath of the entire Academy branches, right? Mm-hmm. Every single category. And out of 190, it was a record of how many came. Mm-hmm. And then you have all these tables at the Beverly Hilton and people sitting, you know, you have the governors, the older Alta Cockers of the Academy. And although I think Ed Zwick would object if I suggested that he was one of them, but he is a governor. And then you have all the publicists and the various journalists and everybody spread out across the room. And you know what? That's a pretty good cross section, I'd have to say, of the Academy in one place at one time. Every time the actors always get the applause. So that goes without saying. But what I picked up this time was that in this particular year, the composers are also pretty big stars. A.R. Rahman and Trent Reznor and Randy Newman
Hans Zimmer was the next to last guy called.
Yes, he was. Hans Zimmer, knowing he had to stamp it. I didn't mind. I mean, he was in flat shoes. The men were in flat shoes. Poor Michelle Williams with those heels. Oh my God. Okay. So, but Annette Bening, perched on Jeff Bridges' knee in the middle of the room. I don't know how to explain it to you. I'm just telling you, she played. They like her.
Sure they do. I've been saying that since the Golden Globe speech where she threw out the Hollywood royalty card about my husband, Warren Beatty. And then we've got the Santa Barbara tribute, the tons of national televised appearances. She's working it in phase two. So she's definitely right on Portman's heels.
I agree. I agree completely. And I think that a lot of people who love Black Swan, as I do, by the way, and I love the fact that Aronofsky got nominated by the Directors Branch, well deserved. Mm-hmm. But the trick here is that it's the older Academy voters who often go with a career prize in a situation like this. And she is, they often take the high road. She is the class act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're actually kind of jumping ahead to that. So let's talk about it. Bening versus Portman thing. I mean, Annette Bening won, not that it necessarily means anything, but she won the London Critics Award on Thursday for Best Actress. And it's a film that actually UK critics, Black Swan, is a film that UK critics didn't really love. It'll be interesting to see if she happens to win the BAFTA as well, because sometimes that can be an indicator of where things are going, like Tilda Swinton winning a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's hard to gauge. I mean, you know that any time somebody wins, it can shift momentum in the race. I mean, so many people have just assumed that Natalie Portman had a lock. But from the beginning, I've often felt, even though it's her greatest performance and the most extraordinary degree of difficulty, the Academy itself just didn't like Black Swan that much, you know? Mm-hmm. So as a whole, at the screening, that whatever that screening was that I heard so many reports from. So, you know, whatever. It's a close race.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the BAFTAs in a bit. That's this weekend's big show. Last weekend's big shows were WGA and Scripter Awards, screenwriting competitions. We were both at the Scripter Awards on Friday night, I think it was.
Yep,
And the
because the
WGA was
WGAs were
Saturday.
Saturday.
Yeah. So obviously the WGA doesn't mean a lot because there were a lot of ineligibilities this year. The King's Speech, Winner's Bone, weren't nominated because they weren't eligible under WGA rules, but they're nominated for Oscar.
But it was surprising that Chris Nolan won.
It was. I thought Kids
And
Are All Right was going to
Lisa
win.
Cholodenko did not. I did too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a reader, I'll just knock this reader question out. Dreyer asks, is it possible that Nolan wins the screenplay category at the Oscars caused by sympathy votes for not receiving a director nomination? I don't really think there are sympathy votes when it comes to that kind of a thing.
I agree with you.
But,
What will happen is that Inception is looking good because they're waging a pretty urgent campaign for technical categories. I mean, a lot of the films are. So
right.
is The Social Network, and there are others. But these, you know, basically, King's Speech wants to win, wants to win, you
Sure.
know, those categories, and probably deserves to, you know, in many ways, visual effects
You're
certainly.
talking about Inception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think that means by, you know, because they feel that he got ripped off of the director. Look, there are 10 nominations for Best Picture. Five of those people aren't going to get director. I mean, that's just the math. I think Inception could do well, but I don't think it'll get screenplay. The Sidler's got that wrapped up.
Yeah, I kind of think that last minute, or not last minute, but phase two push for Inception is it kind of screams of urgency. This thing they put out the other day it would have done well to have more content than every, 15 seconds throwing up another "it's the shit" quote from some critic, just packed with all these kinds of quotes, and it didn't really seem to have much of a message to it. It was just yet
You know,
another
the line.
featurette.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think there's a line that the more sophisticated Oscar campaigners, and sometimes the studios are not the more sophisticated Oscar campaigners, let's be honest. The indies know how to do it a little more subtly. It can't reek of promotion, which is I'm going to skip ahead to your next question, which is
That's a
Melissa
segue if there
Leo.
ever was one.
Yeah, because honestly, Melissa Leo, if you're Sally Kirkland, you know, it's one thing, and you have no indies behind you. You know, there's no budget. You know, you're a scrappy little indie that could, you know, take out your own ad. That everybody gets that. But if you're the perceived front runner, I think that it's a dangerous thing, and what's interesting about it is because of this blogosphere that we have, that we're in, the noise gets much
Yeah,
louder.
it's an echo chamber.
And it just keeps going and going and going. That said, at the Academy luncheon, she got warm applause. Warm applause. People do like her. Actors like her. I know they do. So,
Well, do you think
you
that
know.
this is going to have an impact regardless? I mean.
I already thought that race was wide open, to tell you the truth. You've heard my, you know, one from column A, one from column B theory. The other group of people at the Academy luncheon that were, there was like a long line, a line of people who wanted to say hello to the Coen brothers. And they're very popular
Sure.
and respected. And I just think True Grit has to win something. And I'm going with Haley Steinfeld for that reason.
Yeah, I'm sticking with her. And a reader asks regarding the Melissa Leo thing, based on your observations, this is a good question, so I thought we should throw it in here. Based on your observations of the 20 actors and actresses nominated, which of them are A, campaigning for themselves slyly and craftily with the help of publicists in a not so obvious manner, B, campaigning for themselves actively and fervently, or C, taking a more zen and slightly nonchalant approach to the award season, a la Monique? That last one sums up Bridges to a T.
Or Christian Bale. Christian Bale.
Right.
Christian Bale didn't show up to the luncheon, and he does come to accept an award, like at the Critics' Choice. You know, he'll do that.
He's filming in China too, which is not the
Well, that
shortest flight in the
helps.
world.
That's a good excuse.
Yeah.
But I think that does describe him. He's not a happy glad-hander.
Yeah.
Benning, you said it. Benning's really working it very hard with her publicists and actively and fervently, and it's hers to win, and she's going to go for it.
Is there anyone working it kind of just in column A, slyly and craftily, with the help of publicists, not so obvious that you can think of, really.
Well, Colin Firth would probably be in the classily, you know, modest category.
Well, that's in the know we have it category too, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, he doesn't want to lose it, but he doesn't want to go over the top either. Mm-hmm. But that's the point. There's a lot. There's a way to do this. If you're a newcomer and nobody knows you, mm-hmm. You know, you have to work a little harder than if you've got it in the bag. Mm-hmm. But you can't take anything for granted.
What do you think of Jackie Weaver's campaign? She's been a bit noticeable the last week or two.
I think they've handled that one well. Yeah. I think the Sony people know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Even if they got caught a little short with another year, you know, Bardem is out there. He wants to help the movie. I think beautiful mm-hmm. more mm-hmm. than anything else. I mean, this movie is now being seen in a way that never would have been before. It's probably one of the greatest beneficiaries of a nomination on the entire list.
Mm-hmm. Well, regarding the Leo thing, I guess I should comment on it. I'm with you in that when you're the front runner, it's a bad idea. But I think that the ads themselves are just gaudy and play against whatever
yeah.
she was trying to do about, you know, women of a certain age being able to be on magazine covers and whatnot. I mean, they look like bad glamour shots, if I'm being perfectly honest.
You are being honest, and I think that what this speaks to, though, and I think actors who are the most dominant branch of the Academy will be sympathetic to her here, mm-hmm. because they all know how insecure they are, how they feel like all of them know how tenuous they're. Even Benning said that, you know, at the tribute in Santa Barbara, you know, it's so fleeting. The moments
right.
are so fleeting that when it actually comes together is rare.
Right.
You know, they all know that, and they all know that they could be, you know, yesterday's news in a second. And she's terrified of that, and she's terrified that all these character roles that she's played, these mannish sort of roles that she's known for, you know, that she's done. I don't think she did the right thing at all, but at the same time, I feel like people are sympathetic to her.
It's fair to be sympathetic, but I think part of me also kind of recoils, because it's really not very graceful to be craven like that in a public manner.
I don't think she thinks she's being craven. I think.
Well, you
well,
just said she's
thing.
Terrified
well,
of
somebody.
Of...
That's my read. I mean, somebody did say that the more she talks about this, the bigger the hole she
right,
digs
right.
becomes. And I do agree with that too. The less is more in this situation.
Exactly, and which is kind of the point that I'm trying to make, I guess. But it's just, when you put yourself out there like that, and it's almost like it's a crime to want it too much, and it kind
it
of
doesn't
is.
Doesn't seem like she's, but you know what? It isn't like I didn't get the read that those ads were saying, "Give me the Oscar," as much as they were saying, "Remember that I can be a beautiful woman when you cast me in my next role."
I wasn't getting that read at all. And I feel like it was kind of spun that way after the fact, but
that could be. I could be subject to that. That's true. Anyway, she's not the front runner anymore, I will have to tell you. I think it's a wide open race.
Yeah, yeah. And it would be a bit unfortunate if it ended up going to someone like Helena Bonham Carter, who's fine in the film, I think, but certainly not.
She's rocking it with the press.
Yeah, she is.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
And I love it when she says that she's going to go down the red carpet, you know, and it'll be a disaster, you know, or a catastrophe,
right.
You know. Her fashion look is, she's got a sense of humor, I think, that Natalie Portman would do well to adopt.
An interesting thing, by the way, regarding Carter that I noticed today when I was writing my costume design Oscar guide for the site was that a reader pointed this out, actually. The last time Jenny Bevan won an Oscar was for, I forgot the name of the film. Room with a View, 1986.
Is it that long? She's been nominated a million times.
Oh, she's been nominated 9 times, as has, interestingly enough, Sandy Powell and Colleen Atwood. All three of them, this was their 9th nomination. But that film, Helena Bonham Carter's debut. So here we are 20 years later, 25 years later, Helena Bonham Carter being outfitted by Jenny Bevan. I thought that was interesting.
Well, it's so interesting that you would think that Carter would be overdue too, for a career prize. And yet, as popular as she is with the press, 'cause she's fun, I don't know that I'm feeling any serious buzz going her way. It's almost like she did too good a job and didn't have a flashy enough role, finally, as good as she was. And the same thing was true in Sweeney Todd. I thought she was great in Sweeney Todd, and yet everybody just sort of took her for granted. There's sometimes that's an aspect of a performer who's really good that doesn't do them a service because they're not calling attention to how good they are.
Right. Well, before going on to the BAFTA, since we're talking about King's Speech, the Queen gave her endorsement. You actually sent me an email before we started recording asking, about the is it real or not? Is that perception out there that it's
Well, Geoffrey Rush was admitting that he and Colin Firth had been talking about how the Sun is not the most reliable
Oh, of
source
course.
of information, and that is the source for these quotes.
Oh, it is?
And there,
I didn't track them
yes.
down. I thought it was just a press release that they sent out, which would have been less reliable, probably.
Well, the point is that Harvey Weinstein isn't going to look back. Are you kidding me?
Sure.
It's one of the great, it's one of the, that particular story got enormous traffic on my blog. I'm sure it got it on yours. It's too good to be true, though. That's the, because the Queen doesn't, send out endorsements.
Right. I don't even think
It's,
we actually wrote about it, come to think about it.
and people don't even know, if she saw the Queen.
Right.
That there, so that the point that they were making was that they were skeptical, even.
Well, that kind of brings us to a reader question from Loyal. A lot has been made online about the King's Speech being a Dances with Wolves, Ordinary People, Driving Miss Daisy Around the World in 80s Days, Greatest Show on Earth type of Best Picture quote fiasco in the making. He says, for the record, he doesn't agree with those comparisons. Are those thoughts limited to the Oscar blogosphere, or are you and Anne hearing similar things in the real world? Assuming it wins, where do you and Anne think the King's Speech will fall amongst recent Best Picture winners? I think that kind of viewpoint on this potentially being some fiasco is very much contained to this world we kind of report within. And I think that if it's extended after the Oscars, it'll be just from the screechers who can't really shut up about it in the first place and are gonna give that more life by continuously beating a dead horse and basically telling a lie, as if this
It
isn't a
was
film with a
incredibly well
95%
reviewed.
rating. Yeah,
Incredible.
exactly. So.
And very well respected and very well liked by everyone. I mean, if I can tell you anecdotally, just among all the people I know, this is one of their favorite films of the year. So I don't see what that's where that's coming from at all. I do think that The Social Network plays younger than The King's Speech, and as does Black Swan, in my view. And I think that both of the there are a lot of strong adherents to those two films, who, because they love those films so much and think that they should be winning everything, want to turn The King's Speech into some kind of
Villain.
hidebound, old-fashioned square.
Right.
And as I've said before, the advertising does not help that perception. I
Right.
never liked the ads. But Harvey Weinstein, to his credit, when no one else in the UK wanted to finance The King's Speech, remembered that this was the kind of movie that the Academy loves.
Right.
To his credit, he did it when no one else would. When the period drama was deemed dead, he went ahead and did it. And he deserves a lot of credit for that.
That's well said. Another question from Tom. Oscar winners, particularly for Best Picture, can often be interpreted as a window into a time and place in Hollywood and where the state of film was at its time. What would a King's Speech win indicate about our time and current film tastes? What do you think?
Well,
I'll just jump in and say I think it's a reminder that a certain breed of cinema, which has been kind of slammed with the pejorative old-fashioned or what have you, can still work and be well appreciated by audiences and critics.
It's a story well told. And whenever you see David Seidler, talk in front of a group, you're reminded that this guy's a storyteller. He is so charming and so well spoken and so well read. And, he's like the epitome of a certain class of writer. And it's just heartwarming, I think, to see all of those values rewarded.
Absolutely. Well, this makes a nice segue to BAFTA talk, and I'm going to drop in on Guy here. He actually knows we're calling this time, so it won't be a surprise.
We decided that Guy was the expert on the BAFTAs and that we shouldn't even attempt to take a stab at it.
Hello. Indeed. Hello, Guy.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, good. We're just about to start talking about a BAFTA preview of sorts.
Right, yeah.
And we figured
so we saw the London
Yeah, we
prizes.
just had those, didn't we?
Yeah, that was surprising that they would go with Benning. I mean, did that surprise you?
To an extent, because The Kids Are All Right wasn't really a very big deal in the UK, but at the same time, Black Swan, there has been something of a critical backlash against it here. So I think that might have factored into it. It's an interesting result. It'll be interesting to see if BAFTA, echoes that or not.
Yeah, that's someone actually asked this week if we could, take a stab at predicting any potential upsets or swings in the race that the BAFTA could show. Obviously, a couple of years ago, Tilda
Yeah.
Swinton started her march to Oscar there. I think Benning winning could be
I
Benning
think,
winning. How about that? Could be an
yeah,
interesting start.
that would be the category to watch for an upset. I mean, obviously there's best supporting actress, but that correlates so little with, the list of Oscar nominees that it's not really relevant this year. And the others all seem really kind of set in stone. I mean, I don't see BAFTA going for anything other than the King's Speech. In the top category, and Colin Firth obviously is going to win his second BAFTA in a row. But I think Best Actress is vulnerable, and I think David Fincher is still the one to beat for Best Director at BAFTA, actually.
Oh yeah.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And for the Oscar too, I
Yeah, BAFTA
think.
very often
But how much
splits
impact do you
for Best
think?
Director.
Yeah. How much impact, I mean, really does I mean, it happens to fall at just the right moment this year where winners get
Yeah.
some momentum from it.
It's le to me it's less about what the as I mentioned before, what the immediate impact is as opposed to what it could indicate is going on underneath it all.
But
I
they're
completely
just the
agree.
Brits. They're the Brits. I mean, they're one
Yeah.
portion of
But
the.
it's a segment of the voting bloc that can indicate something, like we've mentioned, Tilda Swinton.
Exactly. And I don't think anybody in America looks at the BAFTA awards and thinks, "Oh, they voted for Tilda Swinton, or they
Yeah,
voted for
it's not
Marion
that.
Cotillard. We should do the same." But it, because of its place in the calendar, it can be an indication of a sort of momentum shift, and it can sort of catch it at the right time. So it's interesting to watch that way. But I think it's always a mistake just to assume that they have a direct influence.
Good. Yeah, that, I would agree with that. That what you're the momentum shift is what I would think it could accomplish or reveal. Yeah.
Exactly. But Guy was actually at the Evening Standard Awards, which was a
I was
completely different British awards
a
ceremony.
very fun evening, yeah. And it kind of shows up where I think BAFTA falls short, because people think of BAFTA as the British awards, but people in the industry here get as annoyed with, BAFTA for ignoring, a whole side of British film as people do with the Oscars for indie American stuff. It's a much bigger industry than BAFTA kind of reflects. And yeah, it was a great night. It was the night where The King's Speech did not win a thing and wasn't even nominated for best film, if you can believe that. So.
Well, the thing is, if it's going to win Best Film, is it also going to win Best British Film, or are they going to farm that out to
No.
something else?
Thing is, Best British Film is not determined by the general votership. There's a smaller jury that awards that, and they very deliberately kind of zig where you expect them to zag. No film, since they reinstated the Best British Film Award about I don't know, quite a while ago. No film has ever won both best film, best British film. It's as if they anticipate, like when Slumdog Millionaire, you know, was so obviously going to win best film, best British film that year went to, oh God, I can't remember now. Man on Wire.
That's right.
Always go for something quite left field, quite quirky, very often independent.
Four Lions?
Fish Tank won last year, and I think Four Lions, yes, is the one to watch this year.
Yeah, that'd be great.
People always assume it's the big one, and year after year, they act surprised when it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So BBC America usually puts the BAFTAs on, and I look forward to watching it every year. I love the BAFTAs, you know, and apparently they're not going to show it.
Oh, really?
I'm very disturbed.
Well, hopefully it'll be online or something.
They always have this drama here as well where they show it on time delay, which is just ridiculous, so that, you know, everyone knows the results before you know, before they see it. And then they also email around a list of results to bloggers and journalists before the actual ceremony, which is ludicrous.
That's terrible.
they have no clue how to actually run a ceremony like that. I'm going to be away in Berlin on the weekend, so I don't know if I'll see them at all, but I wasn't aware that BBC America weren't showing them. That seems very strange.
Well, I'm just looking it up on the site right now to see if I can find a listing, and all the material is from last year's show, but I'll keep looking.
Who's supposed to win this Rising Star Award, or is that the one that they
Well, that's the one that's voted for by the public.
Right.
So again, you kind of have to factor in. And that was where last year, you know, Kristen Stewart beat Carey Mulligan, and then the same night, Carey Mulligan won Best Actress. So it's, and this year there doesn't seem to be such an obvious, like when Kristen Stewart was nominated, you knew that the public was going to go for her because you kind of have to figure out who the young kind of texting kind of masses are going to go for. This year it doesn't seem quite as obvious to me because
the texting masses, that's a brilliant way to put it.
I like that. I like that a lot. Actually, it appears to be on the schedule. It's 8 o'clock on Sunday here in America. You know, whichever time zone that 8 o'clock is, but we'll figure that out. ET is so it would be 5 o'clock in Los Angeles on Sunday. Good.
Cool. Well, I'm thinking Andrew Garfield wins that.
I'm actually just looking at the nominees. I think Gemma Arterton could be a spoiler there because she is kind of
a local magazine fixture.
I mean, she's... Oh, it doesn't matter about the movie she's in, but she's got a kind of youth recognition sort of factor. She's on magazine covers, you know, all the time.
And they're not really nominated for a film. It's just the actor is nominated.
It's just
nominated,
the actor,
you know?
Yeah.
Tom Hardy, Andrew Garfield, Aaron Johnson, and Emma Stone are the others.
Yeah, I wouldn't rate Emma Stone's chances, sadly, but I think it could actually be any of the other four. You know, if the Inception fan base comes in for Tom Hardy, maybe. But yeah, I think Arterton and Garfield are probably the ones to watch there.
Cool. Well, we've got a couple of more reader questions. I want to backtrack just for a second. About the Scripter Awards. Anne is a member of the committee who nominates and votes on the Scripter Awards. And the Social Network won, which we all thought was going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
But I have to say, as I went to USC, I feel like I kind of should make an opinion here, whether it bites me or not. I kind of think that's an affront to what the award is about. Because if you follow the reporting on the Social Network, going all the way back to a New York Magazine piece by Mark Harris, this was not an adaptation. Of course, they're selling a lot of books right now that have the Social Network kind of plastered on them, and it's well done from a business standpoint. But when you hear it from, you know, Sorkin, it sounds to me like he was writing something away from Ben Mezrich's book, and that he never saw a finished product until after he had written a screenplay based on original reporting. So
I'm quite confused by this whole issue because having read when I read The Accidental Billionaires and then later saw The Social Network, and I wasn't aware at the time that they were supposedly kind of created separately, I would have totally thought The Social Network was an adaptation of, because they share mm-hmm. a lot of scenes, they share structurally some very similar things, mm-hmm. and things that seem quite fabricated. So I'm not sure if that's just coincidental, or if there was some kind of meeting of minds at some point. But
I have to go on is the reporting.
I have no problem with it. I think you're splitting hairs a little bit, Chris. We discussed this the other night as well. You were upset about the Sidler being an original as well.
Well, no, I was upset about whoever you were with trying to tell me that it was based on a play, when the fact is, if as a writer you want to write something out as a play in order to work through some character dynamics, but eventually end up writing an original screenplay, that you can't say that the film is based on your play. I think that's just silly, because you simply, it's like I could write a script as a poem just to kind of work out an emotional beat, but that doesn't mean the screenplay is therefore based on my poem. Mm.
But Frost Nixon was based on a play.
Well, a very clear play, you know, a very obvious based on a play that was produced and put on and everything. So, yeah.
But Tom Hooper and his mother went to see this.
They saw a reading. They didn't see a play. They saw a reading of a play.
The title of the award is based on material previously produced or published, and The King's Speech may have been written as a play, but it was never produced or published as such. Isn't that right?
That's right. That's the point I was trying to make. But,
yeah.
I guess this idea that Hooper's mom saw a reading of the play becomes... you know, people think that maybe a play actually was put on, but that didn't happen. But regardless, getting back to my original point, I just wanted to be on the record, because I kind of feel like the award is meant to honor excellence in adaptation of the written word, and there was a lot of just original reporting that was going into this, and it's based on the quote, yeah. It's quote based on the book proposal when you really start splitting the hairs and getting down to it, but you know, whatever.
Didn't the scripters
nominate? He wrote a lot of it without having even seen what the other guy was doing. Yeah.
Didn't the scripters nominate District 9 last year?
They did, because it was based on a short.
Yeah, based on an original screenplay. Yeah, that was when they started to kind of broaden what the written word meant.
Yeah.
But that's fair enough. I mean, it was a short that was produced and it was written out and whatever.
But you know, Toy Story 3, which is in the adapted category of the Oscars, is not considered eligible for the scripters.
Right, exactly.
I don't think it should be. I think it should be an original screenplay.
It should be an original screenplay, but it can't be in terms of the Oscars, because it's based on these characters that have been created.
It's the same as the Before Sunset situation, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Let's knock out these last two questions and we'll wrap it up. Regarding the preferential ballot system in the Best Picture race, which films do you think will be eliminated in the first couple of rounds, and which films do you think occupy the number two position on those ballots? That's from Anita. And that's key. That's an important thing to think about, because, first of all, what do we all think is potentially the film that, after the first round of voting, will have the least amount of number one votes? What do you guys think?
I think it's
127
tricky.
127 hours.
127 hours. No, I think Black Swan would have number one votes. But I think 127 hours would be near the
bottom. Because you know what? A lot of people actually love Winter's Bone, too.
Maybe The Kid's All Right. I think The Kid's All Right would go before Winter's Bone, actually.
So what would we expect to be a number two on somebody who's putting, say, Kids Are All Right at number one?
Social Network.
Or Winter's Bone. I mean, there might be a lot of people grouping those two sort of indies up at the top. So
that's
the performance-driven, female-driven.
Or it could be King's Speech. You know, those are all. Inception could be lower down, honestly.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not sure that's going to have a lot of number one votes.
Yeah.
I think Toy Story 3 could have some number one votes. A lot of people feel very strongly about Toy Story 3.
It was.
And I think I'm pretty sure The Fighter is getting quite a few upper ballot votes, twos and threes, which is why I think it's between that and The King's Speech rather than Social Network and King's Speech.
I think The Fighter might be our runner-up at the moment.
I disagree with you on that one pretty ardently, actually.
Why?
Because just in terms of the anecdotal evidence that I'm hearing, people like The Fighter and they enjoy it and they love the performances, but they don't take it as seriously as some of
See, I don't hear that, so we're obviously talking to different circles, I guess, because I definitely, and it's not, it's, I'm talking less about passion than I am about liking, actually, because that's what gets you at number two, number three, yeah. number four. So
sometimes liking is enough. That's especially if they don't like The Social Network.
By the way, for people who listen to this podcast, you may recall that I've said some pretty strong things about David Russell over the season, and you will be shocked and surprised to hear that I did, in fact, finally encounter him in person.
And he made out with you or something? What was the deal?
And I said I wished him well, and I would be happy to bury the hatchet, and he looked at me and kissed me on the cheek.
Oh, that dog.
And said, it is, you know, it is my job to take it on the chin. And I said, well, I did land a few blows. So I thought he was being very gracious. So
yeah,
do you think they were fair blows?
I do. I think that I was
that he would have no chance at a Best Director nomination because
I was appraising. Look, I brought this up, that I was appraising the general tenor of disapproval that he seems to have overcome, finally. He has campaigned very effectively and overcome what was a fair detriment at the beginning, as described by me.
Indeed, and with that in mind, best of luck to Mel Gibson in 2011.
Well, I think it's great that it
see
hasn't
if he shows
been
up
a factor.
South by Southwest.
Oh, yeah.
Redeemed grace is always a good thing.
Indeed.
You know?
Indeed.
But I think it's great that people haven't held that against him. They are actually, I think when it comes down to it, these people, they do vote on the work.
They're playing it up in advertising, too. I mean, their ads for Best Director say the best comeback story of the year, which is, you know, way to take it head on, you know? I mean, I commend that.
Well, also, when you talk to actors, they all sort of say, listen, you know, he's trying to make it better, blah, blah, blah.
Right,
you know,
right.
They defend him.
Last question here. This is from Joe7827. I've always wondered how each of this year's director nominees is perceived. We've heard that Fincher and Russell, this is a segue, I guess, and apparently Nolan, are kind of unpleasant. Well, Nolan is just, he's chilly, but he's a cool guy. He's a nice guy.
Actually a nice guy.
What has caused these reputations, he asks, and he says, and I guess Aronofsky and the Coens are sort of the mavericks that get to be in their own little world. What do we know about Hooper? You want to take that, Anne?
Hooper has a reputation for being, forgive the expression, a little bit Jim Cameron-like, in the sense that he's very much about demanding a great deal of everyone and very cold, and it's about the work.
Really?
People respect him.
Never heard that.
They respect him. But he has a rep for being very tough to work with.
Oh, I thought the opposite, actually. I thought he seemed like quite a softy.
He's nice to talk to if you're a member of the press.
The press,
that is
sure.
No way to judge anyone, by the way. I found him engaging and charming and pleasant, but he wanted something for me.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, let's be honest about what our roles are here.
Sure.
You know? This is what I hear inside the community in England. By the way, Mr.
I can believe that. I've never encountered him myself. So,
and Fincher is kind of, you know, he's they're asking what caused these reputations. So with Fincher, again, he's always been a perfectionist. He demands a certain quality out of what he's doing, and
they caused their reputations.
Yeah,
but I think
it's not
unpleasant.
Necessarily...
Unpleasant
also,
is an exaggeration. It's it's just. They don't necessarily play the game, you know, or play the publicity game. You know?
Fincher certainly does, and he's totally uncomfortable in that role. He hates it.
Yeah.
He hates it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't
mean
that he's not articulate.
Someone,
no, I don't either. I think it's very clear that he's nothing if not consistent. But by the way, when he wants to campaign for something, he campaigns for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he knows what he knows what to do, when to do it.
I remember a year ago, I guess it was Benjamin Button, at the AFI lunch, he sort of planted some nugget in my ear that he wanted, you know, a spin device that he wanted me to take out into the world. I was very struck by that. he knew how to use me, if you like.
Well, this isn't his first rodeo.
Nope.
All right, well, that's a good place to wrap it up. BAFTA's this weekend, another week of, you know, stuff. There's a couple of Guild Awards next week, the Ace Eddies and the Cinema Audio Society, I believe.
Speaking of which, did you glean anything from the art directors or any of the other
The Guild?
The Annies are another one that you can't, you have to ignore. Because,
yeah, sure, yeah. Mm. Well, the art directors, I actually don't think you can look to, because you're talking about the
so
actual specific
categories.
Discipline
yeah.
voting here instead of the Academy at large voting. But I did actually think it was interesting that King's Speech won the period Art Directors Guild Award. I wouldn't be shocked by the Academy giving it, you know, at large voting for it, but just for the actual art directors to go that way was a little interesting. I would have expected something like Shutter Island or, you know, Robin Hood or even True Grit. But
and then Inception won the other
fantasy. Yeah.
So that
I thought that was interesting that in Inception beat Alice in Wonderland.
I did too. Yeah. I was surprised by that actually. Yeah.
Which is what I'm getting at, kind of, because I think the perception of art direction from the Academy at large would look to Alice and think, "Oh, we should. I want to vote for that," before they would Inception.
Exactly.
Just because of being educated on the matter, yeah. really, you know.
That Guild Award quite often doesn't match up with the Oscar, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. or especially when it comes to Tim Burton movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I mean, I still think that's a little bit of a race, but I'm going with King's Speech from the beginning on that. But yeah,
okey-dokey.
So we will thank you, Guy, for letting us prank call you once more time. And until next time, talk to you then, Anne.
Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.